You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of November 28th, 2017, and episode number 339. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Ryan D. Parsons. Well, tonight is a special night. It's Christmas. No, it's not Christmas. It's almost Christmas. We're past Thanksgiving, and I hope everybody had a nice Thanksgiving week. I work in retail, so I was working all week, all weekend, up to probably about 5 minutes before the show was on. Just kidding. But we're headed into Christmas, and we're headed into what I kind of call the lull of the year as far as paranormal stories are concerned. I'm not sure why, but once the calendar flips and January hits, it usually takes off pretty quickly as far as paranormal stories is concerned. But usually this time of the year, we kind of slow down. So it's when I use this precious time to celebrate the year that was. And this year, 2017, I'm going to be honest with you, it wasn't really that big of a year as far as paranormal stories was concerned. I mean, look at last year. We had Wessie. We had the clown pandemic. We had some pretty big stories. We had some pretty exciting stuff last year, but we'll reflect. We're still going to take the time to reflect. And what I do is over the course of the next 5 weeks, I'm going to debut two new stories as I will reveal the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017. It's weird. I can't believe it's here already. Usually start this the last week of November. Then obviously, like I said, I'll debut two new stories each week until we culminate the day after Christmas with the debut of the number two and number one paranormal news story of 2017. Yeah, and of course, if something goes wrong, which it might, it always does, then, you know, we'll just kind of move stuff around. But in the meantime, we'll still have some late-breaking stories, which we have tonight, a trio of interesting stories, actually, some updates on things that I've already talked about this year, but some new interesting stories, and we're going to be talking about Bigfoot. Yeah, the police are looking for Bigfoot right now as we speak. Amelia Earhart, she's back in the news, and her story is real. My uncle says so. And we'll have an update on that flat earther. I'm sure you saw this. This story is everywhere. I'm surprised about that flat earth guy, that crazy Mike or Super Jim, or I forget what his nickname is, but his steam rocket launch got derailed. And he's flat out of opportunities to launch it right now. Yes. And we'll, like I said, we're going to cover the top 10. Well, the number 10 and number 9 tonight. We're not going to do the whole top 10. I probably could. But yeah, we got some old stories and new stories and the countdown. It's crazy. I can't believe it's already almost December already. Almost three days away. This is crazy. 60-degree day here in Northeast Ohio. Beautiful, sunny, beautiful day out today. Almost put the top down, but I don't know. I don't know with the calendar reaching December. It's crazy. It's crazy. Anyway, this week's news is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. Not right now. Just wait till 8 o'clock. Yeah. Anyway, big thanks. I want to extend some great big thanks to Eric Altman for having me back on his radio show, Beyond the Edge Radio. Had some very bad technical issues with his internet I guess it was October, and wasn't able to do the show at all. And it didn't start out too well on Sunday night either. We're unable to go live on the show. So if you did tune in to hear me talk live, I apologize. You weren't able to hear it live or really be in the chat room, because what would the point be? I'd have to like tell you what I said or anything like that. But it was a great conversation with Eric, and sadly his normal co-host, she was out. She has a really bad ear issue. But I was pleasantly surprised to see that Sean Forkchop Forker as a co-host along with Eric. Sean is a great guy, very knowledgeable, and he and I see eye to eye, which is, I guess, kind of crappy for a radio show, because so do Eric and I. So all three of us were really agreeing with everything that we're all three saying. But still, it was a really good show, and hopefully it will be out this Sunday, and you'll be able to listen to that archive. I guess it's a podcast. Now, Sean is actually the co-creator of the Beyond the Edge radio show. He was a co-host there for a number of years, and I've been on that show a couple of times. So it was really kind of cool to go back and feel like old times, really, I guess, with both Eric and Sean on the show. And as you may know, Sean Forker is now a co-host with Arcane Radio with Lon Strickler and Butch Witkowski. Still a great show. It's just a different show. So I was on there for about 90 minutes, I guess, all told. And we talked about everything paranormal. I think I spent too much time on ghosts, but it just kept coming up, and it was just an easy thing to talk about. We also covered a few touchy subjects, which is really good. You got to be, you got to push the boundaries on these shows. And yeah, the issues for me continue on these shows, but I don't know. We'll see. The year's almost over. Can't wait. And flip that thing to 2018. It's coming up fast. Speaking of 2018, a lot of stuff going on for me. But I've updated the events listing on paranewsinsider.com. Now, it's not everything that's going to be happening. I know there's a lot of events. I haven't gotten to update them. There's a few that haven't really made an announcement, or they've made announcements, but they have not updated their website. So I have probably almost as many that I haven't put on there as what you see on that list. So be patient. But if there is an event that you know is going on and you want to make sure that I include it on the list for 2018, feel free to let me know. You can email me at paranewsinsider@paranewsinsider.com, or get me on Facebook, Paranews Insider, Twitter at Paranews Insider. There's many, many ways to get a hold of me. The website's quick and easy. It's painless. I know people don't like emails, but if you go to the website, there is a contact form that you can send my way, and I'll get it, and I'll take care of it. The Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, have to talk about this. February 17th, 2018, Twinsburg, Ohio, which is smack dab between Akron and Cleveland, Ohio. It's my first attempt at a paranormal conference. I'm a little nervous, but it's going to be great. We have a lot of great speakers. Actually have a couple of backup speakers that will be on hand just in case, including myself, I guess. I guess I could jump up there and, I got a few, maybe 60 or 70 things I could talk about. But this is more for me to run and not be a part of. But I'm really excited about this. This is going to be a lot of fun. So if you're anywhere in the area, and I know it's in February in Northeast Ohio, but rest assured, where the event is right off of a state route, right down the street from the police department. And it's right off of a major interstate, so you shouldn't have any problems traveling and getting here. But yeah, you never know about the weather. That's one thing that you do know about the weather, so you never know about it. Anyway, got some new stories this week, and this one is almost I don't know if it's late breaking, but I just saw it later this afternoon, and I kind of found it a little bit interesting. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek type of story, but hey, why not? So encrypted news, we have an interesting Bigfoot sighting that is getting a little bit of press. I don't know how big this story is. It's just kind of more or less breaking in the media right now. So we'll see how this floats around social media later on today and through tomorrow. Police responded to a motorist who claims that she saw Bigfoot on Saturday night. And Interstate 80 was the scene of the sighting, and Nebraska State Patrol was on the scene with lights rolling, looking for Bigfoot. And KWQC TV reports about this sighting, and they're the apparently the NBC affiliated television station, and they're based in Davenport, Iowa, from what I'm seeing here. It's just one of those little things. And they kind of made fun of it here on Facebook a little bit. They say that somebody reported seeing Bigfoot on the shoulder of I-80 near mile marker 197. I haven't had a chance to really look at everything yet on Google Maps or anything to kind of look at that and see what's around that area on mile marker 197, but I'm sure there's 100 people out there looking right now. A trooper did respond, but it's says here that basically said, quote, Sasquatch remained elusive, unquote. So a Colorado woman was driving along I-80 and spotted what she believed to be a Bigfoot around 9 p.m. And she described the creature as being approximately 8 feet tall and, quote, really heavy and stocky, unquote. I know a lot of people that fit that description. They posted this on Facebook. And yeah, that's never always a good idea. People are making some speculation. And this news story here talks about some of the speculation that was made here about this story. Somebody surmised that, quote, migration climate change is forcing them into new areas. Please drive carefully, unquote. I'm not sure if that's, if they meant that or just said that to be funny or to get on the news. I don't know. That's kind of crazy. But yeah, Bigfoot sighting, you don't normally see this just pop up into a, well, I guess it's Facebook. You see everything on Facebook nowadays. But to see this a major story, I've seen it in about 10 different news agencies have reeled out this story under the Facebook heading. Interesting stuff, but probably enough come across with this. Hopefully nobody goes out there and does anything stupid, like dresses up as a Bigfoot or anything like that. We've seen that happen before, and that didn't turn out very well either. We had somebody hit and killed a while ago. So I had a ginormous mug, 20-ounce mug, big mug. I got from Zazzle, and it's got the Paranormal News Insider logo, the new logo, the blue logo. Had to change, and it's been almost 10 years. I was going to wait till 10 years and change it, but I figured, eh, why not? A little update, a little new color. Splash of goodness. And so I got my tea. Sorry, frankly, I'm a tea drinker. I drink that coffee stuff. Anyway, that's your Bigfoot news. And link is in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, you're going to get the links to these stories. But if you're not in the chat room, rest assured through Facebook and Twitter, I'll be sharing these links that I'm getting to this information. And that Bigfoot story is kind of unfolding a little bit. So I may have a little bit more information and maybe some maps and other things that will keep you entertained during the week when I put these links out there. And another interesting story, this is in other news. Amelia Earhart. I mean, she disappeared 80 years ago. But since then, We've seen so much of her, and she's not disappeared from the news this year at all. I can tell you that much. And speaking of mysteries, it's a mystery that doesn't appear as though it'll ever get solved. I mean, it's so much speculation. Where did she go? What happened to her? I mean, pretty sure now she's dead. I don't think that's a mystery. It's been a long time. But yeah, it's just weird. This thing keeps cropping up. We keep talking about it. We keep speculating. We keep throwing assumptions and finding photographs and boxes and places and saying, oh, there she is. Wait, that's not her. Well, the Amelia Earhart story centers on the disappearance of the pilot along with her navigator, Fred Noonan, back in 1937. The 80-year-old mystery has plenty of guesses as to what happened to the pair, but unfortunately, no solid evidence. That's the problem here to solve the mystery. Earlier this year, we saw the television show Amelia Earhart, The Lost Evidence, which touched on a not too popular hypothesis that the two were taken prisoner and brought to Saipan, where they were eventually executed. Now, a man named William Bill Sablin, is coming forward stating that his uncle, Toon Aiken Tuho, worked at the prison where Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan were purportedly taken prisoner in Saipan. Now, Sablin claims that in 1971, he and his uncle were talking about Sablin becoming a pilot. When his uncle talked about the pair of flyers that were held in Saipan, his uncle described them as being both tall and Caucasian, with the female having short hair and wearing men's clothes. The story mirrors the one set forward by the History Channel with their special on Earhart. That didn't go over too well. Their story hinged on one important photograph said to hold the key and the proof that Earhart and Noonan were captured back in 1937. Unfortunately, the photograph was discovered to have been taken 2 years prior to the disappearance of Earhart and Noonan. The History Channel didn't do their homework. Anyway, big surprise there, right? It's all about the ratings. Got to sell cars. That's what it's all about. Let me get that link in the chat room, because Dita is going to be waiting. There it is. Boom. Boom. So we have, Mad Mike. That's his name. I wonder what he's mad about. A story I covered last week, which has been getting a lot of press and attention lately, is about Mad Mike Hughes, who planned on launching himself into the sky with a steam-powered rocket. What could go wrong in this story? I think it's exciting. I think it's fun. We haven't had a lot of fun stories this year. We haven't been able to really laugh at stuff. I mean, the Flat Earth stuff came out, and, you know, I kind of laughed at that, but then I realized these people are serious. Scary serious. This guy, I mean, come on. He's going to strap himself into a homemade steam-powered rocket. Now, he wants to go and launch himself at about 1,800 feet up at 500 miles per hour. And a homemade steam rocket. I don't know about you, but I like extreme stuff. I like doing semi-dangerous things and getting, being excited and stuff. But I'm not going to strap myself in a steam-powered rocket ever. I don't care who made it. Scary stuff. Anyway, with some mechanical issues with his launch vehicle, actually a motorhome. Yeah, homemade. As well as some issues with the Bureau of Land Management. They basically said, we don't remember giving you permission, verbal permission, because I don't think they do stuff like that. So they don't exactly remember giving the 61-year-old Hughes permission to launch his rocket on public property. So that launch has been postponed. He said the earliest he would do it would be Tuesday, but I've not heard anything about that today. I don't know if somebody knows something. I don't know. I worked all day. I didn't see anything about Mad Mike. and his steam-powered rocket. Wow. I don't know. I don't think he's going to. I mean, he'll do it. It's not, he's never done this. He's actually launched a couple of these. There's a couple of YouTube videos that I watched. It's kind of scary. Wasn't very well, and he ended up, was he concussed? Almost blacked out or something from the G forces. He didn't do so well on his first, at least one attempt. Now he says that he's going to do this launch, and it's, I mean, 1800 feet. You know, people are saying that he's trying to see the curve of the Earth, and I think he's pretty smart to know that that's really not going to be tall enough to do that. But he was talking about doing another one where he's going to go even further up to look. My goodness, I don't know. They should, hopefully they don't let him do that, because that would be spooky, scary. I wouldn't trust it to anybody to go that far up. But 1,800 feet, that's not very far at all. I mean, you can go a lot higher in an airplane, 10 times higher in an airplane. So, and about a mile, I guess, if you wanted to travel about a mile. But, I don't know. That's pretty dangerous. He doesn't believe in science either, which is pretty scary. Yeah, no, I don't see any reports of this guy doing anything. So, we'll see. All over the news, though, I'm very, very surprised how much press this story has gotten. I don't know. It's almost a ridiculous story, but I guess maybe because it's he's putting himself in danger. I don't know. It's kind of funny. Why are we doing the chicken dance in the chat room? See what you guys are missing. If you're not in the chat room, you're missing the chicken dance. Everyone's doing the chicken dance. Well, he's not going a mile up. He's going a mile, I guess, across. I don't know. I don't have a flight plan. The guy's nuts anyway. He doesn't know what's going on. He said he's going to travel up to a mile, but only looking going about 1,800 feet up. Either way, that's dangerous and dumb. I don't know how you can really predict how the rocket's going to move when it's steam powered like that. I don't know. The guy set himself up for some pretty dangerous times. Hopefully he doesn't do it at all. I mean, I don't want to see anybody get killed over a story. I mean, anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about some top 10 paranormal news stories. And again, the reason why I'm not doing a whole show for a countdown is because there's always news. There's always something going on, whether it's Mad Mike Hughes or Crazy Mike Hughes, whatever he's going to end up being called after all this is over, or Bigfoot stories or anything like that. There's always something going on. Now, it's not going to be as much as normal, probably, as we get into a little closer to the Christmas season. So I still want to have a little bit of flexibility to talk about these news stories, as well as talk about these top 10 stories. And what a better way to get people to continue to listen to the show than to throw out one or two at a time. I'll actually be throwing out two at a time and kind of drawing you back into the show week in, week out. We're sneaky like that. That's what we radio show hosts do. We trick you into listening to the shows with a variety of methods such as that. You're going to learn everything here. I tell you, I don't leave any secret unturned. All right. So why lists? We always hear, you know, at the end of the year, the top plays of the year for sports, and we hear the top, you know, the sexiest man alive and all these other things. Everything has a list, seems like. I don't know. Is that still a trend? Should be. And there's always countdowns to, the countdown to this, the countdown. I'm not doing this as a countdown, just a list. And I debated even when I first started doing this, even them at all, because I wasn't sure that that was a fair assessment either. Because, again, based on my perception of these stories, just kind of my opinion, from how I'm seeing these things unfold to how viral they are, how much it's really being talked about on social media, and the actual media, and how far these stories kind of circulate everywhere. I mean, but this list helps us remember the stories from the year and helps us remember some of the issues we encountered during the year. Maybe the story fooled us, or maybe it taught us something along the way. Those are important things. It helps us prepare for next year because I know there's a couple stories here that we talked about last year. Maybe they were on the countdown last year, and there's new versions of that this year. So there's a few that kind of not necessarily repeat. Maybe there's new additions to it, or the story is solved. We've seen that a lot throughout the years. So as we look back on these stories years from now, we may see similar patterns or how stories that were high on the list 1 year and so promising and eventually turn out to be nothing at all. I've had that happen. A couple of top stories over the years have turned out to be hoaxes and really just stuff that fell apart. But at the time, we didn't know. And that's why we should just document it as we know it. Don't change history for that. Just accept it. I screwed up, or I got fooled, or whatever happened. But it's all about that documentation and remembering the past as it happened. So how do I design this list? You know, a lot of people ask me this. People question my method of ranking. A lot of people were upset last year about some of these stories. So how is it put together? Well, again, like I said, the top 10 paranormal news stories are put together strictly by my opinion. If you don't like it, blame me. I'm at fault. I'm the one that does it. I used to ask other people. I used to try to get input from listeners. But that didn't go over well because everybody has their one favorite. And then you end up with 20 people that tell you their individual favorite. And then you have 20 different favorites. And then you know you're going to irritate 19 other people by coming out with the list or your top story. So I just take it upon myself and I put it on my shoulders. And I bear that weight. I bear that burden for you guys, the listeners. But they're collected from the stories that I've talked about all year long. And I rank them by just kind of a few pieces of criteria. And first, kind of the most important thing is that have they made any kind of positive impact on one area of the paranormal? A lot of these stories are hoaxes. A lot of them are misinterpretations. But what have these stories done to create some sort of an awareness of a paranormal subject? Or have they taught the general public something who has a very short-term memory on anything, let alone the paranormal? Or better yet, has there been something about our mysterious world? Are there findings based on this story? Are we solving any type of mystery? Those stories, to me, get heavy consideration to be up at the top. Granted, even hoaxes that I mentioned, they can teach us something if we know for sure that they were a hoax. And sometimes we have stories that are very confusing, very interesting, and they draw us in, and we're waiting and waiting, and there's never a solution. And that story just rides off into the sunset, and we never know. I hate that. I like to know what's going on. Even if it's a year or two later, I like to know that. And, you know, some people think that hoaxes harm the paranormal, but I say some of these educate us on what to look out for as far as story or a type of data that's presented. Information, it's really helpful to disseminate this stuff. And I hope that one day it'll help us be able to judge the real stuff when we actually get the UFO sighting or we actually get the Bigfoot on video for reals. The real Bigfoot sighting, as they say on YouTube. The real one. You know, maybe it'll happen. And maybe we'll see enough of these fake ones that we'll be easily able to spot the real one. I doubt it. I know. I'm just trying to be hopeful here. But we'll see. I mean, it's hard to be skeptical about some of these stories when deep down you want to believe. But I have to look at these things the way they are. I mean, we were talking about a photograph that I was asked to look at on this show that it was on Sunday night. They asked me to give an opinion about this photograph, and I named a couple of animals because that's what you normally would see in a field: a baby Bigfoot, Probably not very high up on the list of things you're going to see if you walk into a field somewhere. So I don't start from that. I start from the realistic stuff. And unfortunately, this picture is not enough data, not enough information to really say either way. You could say whatever you want to say. And everyone's got an argument because you really can't tell what's in this picture. But as I said on that show as well, if you hear hooves, don't think zebras, think horses. It doesn't make sense to think about something that is logically not really probably going to happen. Horses. If you hear hooves, it's probably a horse, probably not a zebra, unless you're at a zoo. Speaking of zoo, that's probably the best segue I've ever had for this. You're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I don't mean that we're a zoo per se. We're a lot of fun. You go to the zoo to have fun, and that's what we are. We're fun, and we're all crazy animals too. Yes, so top 10. Why am I doing it? I don't know. So not only do you have the importance of these stories, it's kind of what I was trying to say. Part one, how important is this? Did it do anything? Did it help anything? Secondly, and I say secondly, it's important, but I try not to allow it to dictate where the story ranks, is how viral the story was. Now, many stories I talk about are popular on paranormal websites, but they haven't really been seen or heard of outside of that arena. And some stories are regionally popular, like the one I just mentioned about Bigfoot. I'm sure it's pretty big in Nebraska. And it's probably going to be very popular on paranormal websites in the next couple of days. But beyond that, who else is going to listen to it? Is it going to be heavy on social media? Is it going to be talked about in Europe, United Kingdom? Are people really going to hear about this story or talk about it? How far is it going to reach on social media? That's what viral means. How viral is this? You know, we always talk about viral videos or memes or all these other things that people laugh and joke about. And some of these things travel pretty far. It's the same with these stories. How many people are listening to these stories? How widespread is it? Does it go beyond a local story? Does it become a global story? So how it's carried in the regular media and how it's carried in social media. And again, there's really no way for me to really measure that. I mean, I can look at Twitter statistics to see what's trending. Facebook, I mean, all I have to do is scroll through and I see all the same stuff and people posting things. And whenever somebody posts a story, you'll see that multiple people have posted that as well. So you'll know if a story is really picking up steam. But again, it's kind of guesswork because I don't have a million friends and I don't know what other people are seeing out there on social media. It's kind of a guess. But I use that as a gauge a little bit. So it's just a gauge. So you kind of weigh all these things together and then you kind of step back and look at these stories. And, you know, one of the last things I kind of look at is the reality of the story. And what I mean by that is, does this story include a real person or is it possibly just something that's just made up? And unfortunately, we have a lot of stuff that's just made up for people to make money. I guess there's no way around that. Website hits. Is it something that's a YouTube video where they're getting it's monetized? Things like this are very concerning. Now, I usually do that pretty early on to make sure that anything that I'm talking about is truly newsworthy, or I'm going to teach you the reality behind it. I'm going to let you know that this person is more than likely just making this up because of this or that. But still, some stories are a bit questionable in their makeup and are just stories hyped up for the paranormal community. And, you know, I have to talk about the stuff that's popular and give you guys the basically the insider viewpoint from my experience in dealing with all these types of stories and cases and evidence reviews over the years, working with a variety of organizations and groups and things, and disseminating all types of photographs and audio and different things. So, you know, that's my strong suit. That's why I do this show. Am I always right? Usually. No, I'm not always right, but I try my best, and I try to bring you things the way that I feel should be talked about. And unfortunately, you know, I'm a little skeptical, because I think you have to be a little skeptical when it comes to these stories. You can't believe everything at face value, because there's a lot of people that are just vying for attention, and they're out to fool you. And if you believe them, I hate to say it, but you're a fool yourself, in a way. I mean, I like to trust people. I like to trust what they say. I like to trust what they post. But sometimes people don't do their homework. They just kind of post things. They get an email and say, oh my gosh, this guy said he saw Bigfoot. And then it's making the rounds the next day, and everyone's laughing. Not everyone, but the guy that wrote it's laughing. So you have to be careful, and you have to disseminate this information. And, you know, I do the best I can to filter this information down to you guys and present it, not just how it's reported, but possibly and potentially what's really going on behind the scenes, and as well, if I can get the end as well. So that leads us to that defining moment, that moment where the top 10 paranormal news stories will start. And I'm nervous about this. I'm not going to lie, because this year, like I said, a lot of stories, I think I had, I handpicked, and I'll give you behind the scenes here. This is what I do. So essentially every week that I do this show, I have show notes. So I have all the links. I have a bunch of backstory information. I have some quotes and different things that I bring to you guys. And so what I do is, toward the end of the year, I'll start going through all these and copying and pasting all this stuff that I think is important. And I kind of group it by the story. So some stories are pretty big, and they kind of – they're there on their own. They can stand on their own 2 feet. Other stuff, you have these mundane Bigfoot stories. You have these mundane kind of Loch Ness monster stories, and you kind of sometimes you just group them together. Now, if there's one ginormous story that sticks out above all of those within that group that can stand on its own, it's very viral, it's very important, and it separates itself from the rest, and that I'll run with that story. But if they all kind of just kind of blah, they're just kind of there, then I kind of leave them grouped. And if that grouping of stories is important enough, I guess they can call it bundling. I guess bundling is a cool hip-hop word to use nowadays. All the kids are using it on the street corners to bundle their stuff, you know, the internet and their television and all that stuff. That's hip. So I'm trying to be hip here. Just kidding. I'm doing a horrible job. But anyway, bundling. You know, you bundle a couple of stories together and you throw them out there because they can't really stand on their own. They don't have the weight to really carry themselves through that top 10 to be better than any individual story. And there's a few here that I'm going to talk about. I think I got one tonight. I have one standalone story and one that's kind of bundled together. But this year, you know, sometimes you just don't have those super strong stories that were going on and on all year long that were just really important and really viral. And even the flash in the pan story that may last a couple of 2 or 3 weeks that were just huge. Huge stories, or stories that really defined something or changed history or brought us closer to answering something about the paranormal. You don't always get that stuff. And this year it was kind of boring. I'm not going to lie. You have those years. We've had several years that were just huge. Then it's some just knockout stories. And then you have years like this that it just seems like a lot of stuff just kind of gets lost. It gets blended together. So when I put all these stories together and I kind of started thinking about it, I made headlines, basically a list of stories and some of these sub stories. And I kind of thought about, well, this one should be here. That one should be there. This is a pretty popular story. Oh, this changed a little bit of history, I guess, in a way, you know, and I kind of ranked it and I stood back and I looked, I was like, oh gosh, no,
no one's going to like this at all. And I kind of went back and forth with a lot of this stuff. And I'll be honest with you, I've changed even the top story this year has changed 3 times. And I don't know. It's kind of a crapshoot this year. I almost just decided to say, here's 20 stories and you rank them because it was almost like that. But I think it's important that I kind of give my viewpoint on this and tell you why. So without further ado, I'm going to talk about number 10 here tonight. And number 10 on the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017 is about the Flocalypse. The Flocalypse. Now, the Flocalypse, if you don't know what that is, over the years, we've had a number of huge stories about mass die-offs, animals dying in huge numbers. And the story, it's trended in the paranormal for a long time, number of years. And it was, number 3 on the list once at one point in time. I can't remember. But it was one of the top stories that I've covered during 1 year because it just, my gosh, it never stopped. It started earlier in the year. It was actually like January 1st. And it never stopped all year long. There was all these stories about mass animal die-offs. People were thinking something is going on. It's the end of the world. Something is happening. So the Flocalypse, yeah, it got wasn't really necessarily a paranormal story, but the paranormal people, man, were they in love with it. And so when the story came out about the Flocalypse getting a partial explanation, hey, you know, I kind of thought about it. Let's put it on the list and didn't really, I don't know. There's a lot of other things that could have beat it out. But anyway, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration that hides the fact that the Earth is flat, announced that it is launching a thorough study into the idea that solar storms may be the cause of massive beaching of cetacean animals. These mass stranding events happen all over the world, and many do not have an explanation. Now, I've made mention of these events in the past of the Flocalypse story. Like I said, it's trended in the paranormal for many, many years. It's not necessarily paranormal, but it's talked about in the paranormal news a lot. Man-made climate change, sonar operations of the Navy, potential pole reversals, and many other explanations have been thrown at the wall, but none of them can seemingly explain more than a handful of these events. So what's going on? A NASA heliophysicist is teaming up with the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, and the International Fund for Animal Welfare, or IFAW, to determine whether a link between solar storms and these mass die-offs are related. Now, the study would center on existing data of these mass stranding events as well as prior solar storms. And their work is aimed to be was aimed to be completed by September of this year. It was actually published in August. And Desiree Reeb, a marine biologist at BOEM's headquarters in Sterling, Virginia, said of this study, quote, "The results of the study will be informative for researchers, stranding network organizers, resource agencies, and regulatory agencies. If we understand the relationship between the two, we may be able to use observations of solar storms as an early warning for potential strandings to occur. This allows stranding responders in global hotspots and really around the world to be better prepared to respond, thus having the opportunity to save more animals," unquote. And in September, there was an update that their work was published in August of 2017 in the International Journal of Astrobiology. And in their paper, they described that they, quote, "investigated the possible reasons for this phenomenon based on a series of strandings, 29 male sperm whales in the southern North Sea in early 2016. Whales' magnetic sense may play an important role in orientation and migration, and strandings may thus be triggered by geomagnetic storms. This approach is supported by the following. One, disruptions of the Earth's magnetic field by solar storms can last about 1 day and lead to short-term magnetic latitude changes corresponding to shifts of up to 460 kilometers. Two, many of these disruptions are of a similar magnitude to more permanent geomagnetic anomalies. 3, geomagnetic anomalies in the area north of the North Sea are 50 to 150 kilometers in diameter. And 4, sperm whales swim about 100 kilometers per day and may must be able to distinguish between these phenomena. Sperm whales spend their early non-breeding years in lower latitudes where magnetic disruptions by the sun are very weak and thus lack experience of this phenomenon. Naive whales, 4, become disoriented in the southern Norwegian Sea as a result of failing to adopt alternative navigation systems in time and becoming stranded in the shallow North Sea, unquote. So the results might not be completely conclusive, but certainly points in the right direction. And this may also explain a lot of other animals' strange behavior that's led to many of these aflocalypse stories. So, and hopefully, now that this stuff has been published, this is going to force other people to really take a closer look at this. And I don't think 10 or 20 years ago people would have published anything like this. There would have been kind of questioned about it. We always thought that, you know, geomagnetic stuff had something to do with bird migration and things, but storms had really never taken into consideration than kind of a passing through a joke about whale behavior and things. But I think it's good that these people have looked a little bit outside of the normal way of thinking to potentially explain these mass whale beachings and mass whale strandings. So this could explain a lot of these things, these birds that get confused and die suddenly. You know, a lot of people blame this on Mother Nature. Well, you know, animals just die. It happens all the time in the winter and in the spring. It's just how it happened. Why does it happen? So this is interesting. So why did the story make the top 10? If it's not paranormal, why is it here? Brian, convince us. The Aflocalypse was the number 5 story. I thought it was number 3. Number 5 story in 2012. The number 2 story in 2011. So it's been there. It's been an ongoing paranormal story. So just because it's not, I mean, it has been in the past. So it's kind of wrapping up a little bit of history. While we know that these mass animal die-off stories are more than likely natural or caused by disease, these strandings of whales, unfortunately, did provide scientists with some solid data that might help save them in the future. So the sad event actually turned out to be a good thing, blessing in disguise, a silver lining in the clouds. And this work, again, might lead to others making similar findings in other animals, which is important. But you know, when I said this during when the story came out, I'm kind of, you know, it's sad to see animals die, but you know what? Animals die. People die. Everything dies. We just can't save everything. And sometimes when we start messing around with Mother Nature, sometimes we make things a little bit worse than what they were before. Just, I don't know. Sounds like something out of Jurassic Park. So why was the story only number 10? Well, the story was neither viral nor was it really paranormal. But while it did piggyback on the Aflocalypse stories of years gone by, it was just a lone story. However, scientific research such as this gets strong consideration, and its relationship to these strange die-offs thus helps it cracks the top 10. Now, unfortunately, you know, I don't know if I'm going to regret this, but you know, looking back, it's going to knock out a couple of stories that were some pretty popular stories. And people might get upset. But again, anything scientific that can validate something or later on kind of provide a little bit clearer picture of what had happened in the past, I think it should get some heavy consideration. So that's your number 10 story, the Aflocalypse, partially explained. Number 9, this is a shoo-in. We've already talked about this guy tonight. Number 9 is Bigfoot. And again, this is one of those bundled
stories. It's not really anything that's carries its, you know, one story within all this carries it. It's just kind of more or less a collection of stories, a collection of information that I kind of decided, well, there's enough to make this kind of crack the top 10 and really not go any further than that. But number nine this year is a collection of Bigfoot stories. And it all kicked off in January with the North Dakota Bigfoot sighting that had a trail of 7 miles. If you remember this one, back in Ellendale, North Dakota, back in January, mid-January. Small town, less than 5 miles north of the South Dakota border, which is Ellendale, North Dakota. And the surrounding area, it's mostly flat, farms and grasslands, but there's some hills and apparently a Bigfoot as well. Christopher Bauer says that a friend of his contacted him after he saw a hairy creature outside of her window. Of the encounter, Bauer said, quote, she described him as huge, hairy, ugly, and a monster. I guess that kind of describes it. If a Sasquatch is looking through the window at you, that's how I'd describe him too. Unquote. Bauer then found footprints of what the woman supposedly saw, and he tracked the animal for purportedly 7 miles. Bauer claims to be an experienced trapper, and he photographed numerous prints and studied the stride length and the other sign the creature left. He's convinced that this was not a person and seems to know a thing or two about Bigfoot, as he says in the WDAY NBC News interview, quote, it's a Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Gigantopithecus, whatever you want to call him. He's a real animal. He's here, and I want people to know, unquote. The tracks were 18 inches long by 8 inches wide, and the creature had a 4-foot stride. Bauer said the tracks were deep in the snow, so it made it very easy to track. A 7-mile track line is pretty impressive, but winter conditions are always a prime time to see the tracks of any type of creature. Bauer says that the tracks are too perfect to be a hoax. And what he means by too perfect is that they're probably just like normal feet. You know, they're not like fake boards or rubber shoes. They're not exactly the same each time the he sees a print. They're a little bit different. So could this be the real deal? Bauer seems to think so. And the best line of the interview is when he says, quote, truth is out there. It's there. I know he is. I tracked him, unquote. Cool cat. Bauer sent tracks to her, who is referred to as a Bigfoot expert at the University of Idaho, who says that the tracks look promising. Well, we can obviously assume that that was at the University of Idaho. That would be Dr. Jeff Meldrum. Bauer's hope that someone is able to get video evidence of this, but also hopes that no harm comes to it. The fact that Bauer seems to know a lot about Bigfoot and assumes it is this creature without any potential other explanation is really the only thing that bothered me about that story. But it wasn't too long. About 3 weeks later, there was another story about this same incident. There was an anonymous letter sent to the ABC network affiliate in Fargo, North Dakota, stating that the Bigfoot tracks were created not as a hoax, but of a prank. A photograph of the letter on WDAY website showed that the person wrote, had screwed those wooden feet to an old pair of shoes and then walked on the wheel tracks on the road to the farm, knowing full well traffic would erase any sign of how I approached and left. Once at the farmstead, I noticed it's on in the house and tried to see if anyone was up, but the shade was pulled. I decided I was there, so just as well finish, lights or not. I walk around the house trying to leave prints in what little snow was there. As I was crossing the front of the house, I noticed my friend's female friend walk past the window. She happened to look out the window, and I froze. Busted, I thought she looked directly at me. It seemed then quickly turned and went back the way she came, and I took off, unquote. So mystery solved, right? Well, maybe not. The person also admitted that they were drunk at the time, that they, not that they sent the letter, but that they made these footprints.
The person also sent in a photograph of the shoes that they used with a piece of wood placed on the bottom of high top shoes. Well, so definitely the end of the story, though, right? Well, Christopher Bauer doesn't think so. He finds inconsistencies in this version, in this letter, and he thinks that the letter itself is actually the hoax. He doesn't feel that the person's being hopeful and is trying to dispel the notion that Bigfoot would really be in the area. Well, that story kind of fizzled out. That was the last we heard of Christopher Bauer and these 7 mile tracks. We still don't know what the truth is, or if there's any truth to the story at all, to be honest, but intriguing nonetheless. We'd have to wait till August until the next big Bigfoot story popped up. And it was a really strange set of stories. Yes, it was a set of stories. A two-part saga of strangeness is what I said. A group calls itself Bigfoot 911 was out in the woods in Dowell County in western North Carolina on Friday, August 4th. John Bruner of the group posted on their Facebook page that the group had hit pay dirt, detailed sighting of the legendary creature of Bigfoot. The group had put out glow sticks and then heard something approaching the area when Bruner got his sighting. Were they having a rave in the woods? He said, quote, "The angle of the moon was shining straight down the road, and something big stepped into view. I turned my headlamp on, and I saw a large bipedal animal covered in hair. I took one step in the woods and took off where it went into the woods," unquote. At this point, Bruner was able to get within about 30 yards of the creature and was able to describe it in detail. He said, quote, "Its face was solid black with no hair on it. The hair looked shaggy all over its body. It turned, took 5 steps, and was at the bottom of the hill, probably 30 yards. I could see the gluteus maximus flexing with each step," unquote. Well, the group tried to track it, but they saw no more signs of the creature. But later on in the night, something was throwing rocks at them. So was this proof of Bigfoot? Well, part two of that story came from somebody else. As they say, there's always two sides to every story. And this gentleman, Gowan McGregor, age 36, resides in Minnesota, and he's had the goal of connecting with Sasquatch at a spiritual level. McGregor has essentially combined his Christian beliefs with shamanistic approaches in an effort to connect with Enkidu, a central figure in the ancient Mesopotamian epic of Gilgamesh, or Sasquatch. McGregor was recently visiting eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina, practicing his rituals. And this is when he states, quote, "As a practitioner of Enkiduism, the foremost sacrament I practice is the wearing of hair-covered animal skins and wandering the forest, the same way Gilgamesh honored him thousands of years ago." While this may seem unusual, the practice actually dates back long before Gilgamesh, as images of shaman dressed as animals appear as far back as the Neolithic paintings in France's Trois Frères cave. Even today, there are hundreds of shamanistic traditions around the world that involve dressing in a similar way. To join this ancient lineage and honor Enkidu, I sewed animal hides together, fabricating my own ritual garments, unquote. Well, he used raccoon skins, I guess as any shamanistic man would do, and he entered a deep tranced state, where then he describes in his blog, quote, "To become possessed by the spirit of nature and opening communication with the individual elements around me," unquote. Yikes. McGregor states it was him who the Sasquatch 911 group came across in the woods in North Carolina, and that the fact that he was there and they were there is no coincidence. He also states that he moved away from the group when he noticed them, but never threw rocks at them. Awkward that they were staring at his butt. It's interesting that both groups were in search of Bigfoot using vastly different means. Granted, Bigfoot 911 disagrees with this story, or this version, I guess, and the story is also related to a couple of weeks later in September, on September 19th, that episode where a woman was selling a Bigfoot attractant that she called Bigfoot juice. Bigfoot juice. She only wants me for my Bigfoot juice.
I guess there should have been a song about that, which the Bigfoot 911 group says actually led to their success. Then in October 17th, we had another story about Bigfoot and flying pigs. Yeah. That involved Jeffrey Gonzalez, who said of this particular sighting, quote, one of them, which was extremely tall, had a pig over its shoulder. And the five scattered, and the one with the pig was running so fast, it didn't see an irrigation pipe, and it tripped with the pig flying over, unquote. Wow. Gonzalez states that 5 years ago, a woman reported that her sons had seen a Bigfoot in her orchard. A few years later, a man reported seeing five Bigfoot in an orchard across the street from his home, which is the same orchard from the prior report. So what are the odds of these three people? Three different families who don't know each other within a radius of 2 to 3 miles come and tell this guy that it all matches up. It's weird. What are the odds? Well, Jeffrey Gonzalez is the leader of Sanger Paranormal Society. And back in 2011, the group took center stage on probably one of the worst Bigfoot evidence-finding press release conferences in history. It was horrible. Horrible. Now, they claimed that they had, quote, the best evidence of Bigfoot since the Patterson film in 1967. No, they didn't. Other evidence was nothing more than spears, their vehicles. And they were pretty sure, that's a quote, pretty sure it wasn't a bear or a person. Now, basically, during the conference, they were basically saying that they need better equipment and things. So it essentially just turned into a plea for more money in the form of a press conference. It was pretty embarrassing for everybody involved, I think. And their DNA expert was a guy who he didn't work for the police department, but he's not a biologist or zoologist. Doesn't know the difference between a bear and a gorilla anyway, as far as DNA or anything they would leave behind. Yeah. Nothing came across with that story either. But then we have Todd Standing. Todd Standing, another story about a guy who's got a little bit of a shady history as far as things are concerned with Bigfoot. He's claiming that he has the best evidence ever. Again, here it is. His press release he has for this, he's got a documentary that's out, Discovering Bigfoot. He says, quote, a Bigfoot documentary so significant, experts believe it could prove in a court of law that Sasquatch exists, unquote. Yeah. Well, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't bothered. I haven't really seen too much of this. Not too far later, this came out in the end of October, right before Halloween. Now, on Halloween, I reported he plans to take the province of British Columbia to court, basically. He plans to, quote, present physical, forensic, and video evidence, eyewitness testimony from wildlife biologists, wilderness experts, and more in a court of law to prove beyond the shadow of a reasonable doubt the Sasquatch resides within the forests of British Columbia and eventually Alberta and the U.S., unquote. And Todd Standing will also enter his new documentary as evidence, which he says contains, quote, crystal clear video evidence, unquote, of the creature. Oof. Well, you know, I use the terms monetize and money grab. You can also add publicity stunt for this one. I don't know. But again, this story is kind of leaving us hanging. We haven't really heard too much about it. Honestly, I have not seen this video. I was hoping to see it before the top 10 came out, but I'm not paying money for it, folks. No way. No way. Eventually I'll see it, though. Eventually I have to put down a dollar or something to watch this thing, but not in a hurry. I don't think it's going to really provide us with anything conclusive, and it's not going to prove anything anyway. So why the story made the top 10? Well, obviously Bigfoot generates a lot of stories every year, most of which, again, are hoaxes and laughable stories. 2017, no different. But between getting a lot of attention in the paranormal as well as in the media, there were also some very bold claims made by Todd Standing that have yet to hold up either in court or the court of public opinion. I mean, a lot of people this year, it was the kind of the trend to say that this is the best, this is the proof, this is what we need to validate. You don't usually hear that. It's every now and again. We've heard that from different people, Tom Biscardi and other hoaxers. And as a matter of fact, a very large hoax back in 2008, the Georgia Bigfoot hoax, was really what started me on this journey for the Paranormal News Insiders. So it's kind of fitting that we talk about Bigfoot here, making the top 10 again. I think it's almost been every single year I've done the Paranormal News Insider that Bigfoot has made the top 10. Just one of those guys that everybody wants to believe in. So why is the story only number 9? Well, hoaxes, potential sightings, and bold claims, well, they don't add up to much. And the top cryptid in the world was lucky to make the top 10 this year due to a smaller number of stories than recent years. Yeah, normally you have about 20, 30 big, Bigfoot sighting stories. You know, they kind of all tie together, and we're talking about all of them every couple of weeks. But this one, this year, not that many. But the ones that were there were pretty impactful as far as their bold claims and their interesting stories. And I got to admit, though, there's honestly wasn't very much keeping the story from being beaten out by the Loch Ness Monster, let alone the Aflocalypse story. And at one particular point in time, Bigfoot was not in the top 10 at all until I stood back and looked at it and kind of readjusted it and moved it around. And I kind of felt like this collection of stories with some of these statements that were made that who knows? I mean, maybe there is this proof that everyone's talking about. I doubt it. But who am I to judge? We'll find out. Maybe next year we'll be talking about the number one story being the discovery of Bigfoot. I highly doubt it. But you can dream. You can dream. I seriously doubt that. But it's interesting to see how these stories have evolved over the years and how belief in Bigfoot never seems to wane despite of a continuing true lack of evidence. And I don't know. We'll just keep an eye out. But again, your number 10 story for 2017, a Aflocalypse, gets a partial explanation. And your number 9 story this year, Bigfoot, collection of stories, collection of potential findings. And we can also add in the one that I just talked about tonight, the Nebraska I-80 sighting, where a woman claims that she saw it, and the Nebraska State Patrol says, well, he's on the loose. We don't have any evidence. Go figure. We'll see if anything comes out to that one. Maybe we'll get more information about that sighting. I don't know. Maybe this will be the one. Who knows? I mean, when you hear about a Bigfoot being seen on the interstate, I don't want to see anything get killed. But you know what? Deer get hit by cars. I hit one last year, killed one. You see them all over the road, all over the freeway. They get hit. Mountain lions get hit. Elk get hit. Moose get hit. Pretty much every major animal that has any sort of traveling in areas where people live, they get hit, whether it's a turtle, a deer, or any of these other animals I mentioned. But Bigfoot, he never gets hit. Even people get hit by cars. You think we would know better. Think we would be a little bit more intelligent. But even we get hit by cars. So it's kind of weird that we've never seen a Bigfoot get hit by a car, especially on busy I-80. Weird. But who knows what could happen. We'll keep an eye out. And again, not like I want to see one get hit, but you know what? Maybe we just need it. No, I'm not going to total my car for that, but maybe somebody could donate their car to, just clipping one pretty good. So we're just kind of limping around. We can catch up to it. I'm not saying to kill it, but I think that's what's going to take anyway. So I know maybe you don't agree with it, but that's my take on the first two of the top 10, but you don't know. You have no clue what's left. Now, you do know that I did spill the beans there, that the Loch Ness Monster, maybe he didn't make the top 10 this year. Oh, he's been in there quite a bit, but who knows? We'll see. what's remaining now in the top eight. Ooh, sounds like MySpace. Wow, I just dated myself there. But anyway, yes, we'll continue to count down two more each week until we hit December 26th, where we will debut the number two and number one of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017 from the Paranormal News Insider. Again, my viewpoint, my look at these stories, covering them all year long. It's just kind of how I see them, how they landed there on the table, and how I see them ranked out. And again, there's a lot of other information that I'll be talking about between now and then as far as top 10s. I will talk about the top 10 that happened last year. We'll talk about some of the top stories of years gone by, like we did last year as well, just to kind of refresh your memory. But again, the big thing is that any big breaking story, anything that we need to talk about, obviously, we're going to take the time to talk about those stories. So don't fear. We'll cover all that. Any regular story. So it's not just going to be me talking about stuff from days gone by or months gone by. We're also going to continue to talk about the news as it happens. So with that, big thanks to Cindy, my producer, to the poor chicken that lost its life tonight so I could make sure that Skype worked a little bit. Ugh, spending a lot of money sacrificing chickens. But anyway, thank you to Paul and Dita in the chat room for help keeping everybody entertained and keeping them awake, because I know I like to put people to sleep. Anyway, everyone else, I appreciate you listening to the show. I honestly do, and I get it. I'm on a wacky hour, 7 to 8 o'clock. Not my fault. It's my job's fault. But anyway, I appreciate you tuning in and listening and hope that you learned something tonight, because that's what it's all about. Yeah. For that, I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Reporting.